T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Nothing Impossible on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, it's the show where we talk about everything that people think is impossible. We just tell them, you know what? It's actually possible. This is Travis Sheridan in studio with Michael Calhoun. You're listening to Nothing Impossible on KMOX.
Yeah, we've got a jam-packed show of local innovation and local connections. St. Louisans hustling around the world as well.
Around the world to help in a very critical time. And so we're gonna jump into the interviews pretty quickly. And we're going to kick it off with talking about the Ameren Accelerator and their new class of entrepreneurs.
And Ameren Accelerator, Warner Baxter, the CEO of Ameren, talking about St. Louis.
Then our second interview is a guy that has one of the best attitudes I've seen, Christian Johnson,
yeah.
Right? Guy was on fire as we were talking about this interview, and he's the co-founder of MultiPass, and talking about the importance of investment opportunities for a diverse populace.
And making sure that those not only investment opportunities are there, but the actual venue to work out of as well, have a desk to sit at.
And we're going to conclude the show talking about some tech that was going on, being built out of Puerto Rico, and then the hurricane hit last year, and FEMA got involved, and this tech company has pivoted in a way that's interesting and is a little bit heartbreaking, just to show how the bureaucracy can kind of slow down innovation sometimes.
And just to show how much your life can change, and what you think your company is doing can change in the course of a year.
So it's a lot to talk about. We're going to jump right into it. Stick with us, and first up, Warner Baxter from Ameren.
We'll be right back.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on KMOX.
Well, we're backstage at the pageant right now. I think that this spot right underneath Pharrell Williams is reserved for the guy who kicked off the program here on the stage today, Warner Baxter of Ameren. How was it introing the demo day for the Ameren Accelerator?
Well, you know, Michael, it was absolutely terrific. You know, this is just another exciting day. Second year of the program, and, you know, the excitement in the crowd, the excitement from the companies, you know, this is, pardon the pun, has a lot of energy. We have a lot of energy in the space today.
Well, there should be a lot of energy in this venue. Talk about these companies. Half of them, it looks like, are from St. Louis or going to be from St. Louis, yeah. And the other half are coming to St. Louis and getting a taste of it.
We're working on it. You know, you're right. You know, of our six cohorts, you know, we had two that were from St. Louis originally, and one from Tel Aviv, Israel. They are going to relocate their company here because, you know, look, the St. Louis ecosystem is quite special, and we're part of this. You know, it is very welcoming to these entrepreneurial companies, and companies open their doors, investors open their doors and their pocketbooks to invest in these companies. And this is why these companies want to stay here. Number one, they have the ecosystem. Two, it's very affordable. And three, we have the talent for those companies to grow.
What are the, I guess, new advances or new approaches, or what are you looking for when a big Fortune 500 company invests in a small three-person startup from, let's look at the list, Israel?
Right. Well, you know, the big picture idea and concept behind our accelerator program is to identify first and then accelerate the implementation of energy solutions for our customers. That's what it's all about. So when we started the program last year and even into this year, you know, we look at, you know, really across the board of all kinds of technologies, things like cybersecurity, which is the company from Israel. There's an organization that's working into electric vehicles, autonomous vehicle infrastructure. Quite cool. Those who are working on a more resilient grid. For those controllers, they have technology to make it even more reliable and efficient and effective. We have others, you know, another St. Louis company who actually has software to help manage major construction projects. You know, if you think about energy infrastructure, they're major construction projects. We need to make sure we do those right. And then you think about sustainable energy. There's a company out here that when you walk on tiles, it actually creates energy. They're trying to harvest all of that energy. And that too is amazing. And then certainly last but not least, you know, there's a company called Applied Particle. know, they're all about safety solutions to try and have sensors for those who are out in industrial areas to make sure that they identify some hazardous substances should they be out there, and they can identify them in a timely fashion. So it's really, it's a broad spectrum. And because we want to have that broad spectrum because, you know, our customers have a broad range of energy solutions and needs, and that's what it's all about.
Last time we talked, I think I asked about the any culture clashes between a big Fortune 500 company, people wear suits, and a three-person startup where they might wear, you know, short-sleeve shirts to work. Maybe this time, in terms of the industry, has there been a disruption with what you've done in the industry, and are other big electric utilities and other public utilities taking a look at this and saying, this is how we get the latest technology. Ameren's got to figure it out. We've got to copy this.
Well, you know, number one, I hope there are some clashes, right? Because this is how you get better. You know, you want to bring some different mindsets together for those, like you say, maybe the suits to those that are the entrepreneurs. I mean, that's how we get better. It's that diversity of thought which makes us better. And so I'm absolutely convinced that we're on the right track. You know, in terms of how others in the industry, you know, frankly, there aren't as many doing accelerator programs. I would say that we're one of the leaders. I think others are now looking at it because they're seeing what we're seeing in terms of keeping not just our finger on the pulse, but, you know, frankly, Michael, we've had, you know, some from our last cohort who are already doing work for us, who are actually serving our customers as part of our energy efficiency programs in Illinois and soon in Missouri. So this is not just a science project. This is a project that we're hoping to have products that go and really create a brighter energy future for our customers and the communities that we serve.
When I talk to these companies, especially the ones from out of town, they don't necessarily have an impression of St. Louis before they come, but they certainly have an impression of St. Louis after just spending a little bit of time here, not even seeing the town, but seeing the people, meeting the people, getting a feel for, I mean, the company from Israel says here for just a little bit, they already have six large companies who are customers of theirs and are just shocked at how they said maybe it's a Midwest thing. People are so nice here. They're also so generous with their, even if they could be in theory a competitor, everybody here kind of shares in the experience.
Yeah, you know, Midwest nice works in this particular situation. You know, I'm born and raised St. Louis, and so I'm not at all surprised. Even when I introduced the cohorts, you know, several months ago, I said, you know, you're going to find out things about St. Louis that you never knew, and you're going to be pleasantly surprised. And so here we are. They're now, you know, growing their companies, starting their companies, and growing their companies here. And so, you know, look, St. Louis has so many great stories. You know, we've had our share of challenges, but we have far many greater stories that we need to share. This is one of the success stories, this Ameren Accelerator, and how we're bringing companies here to continue to grow this innovation ecosystem, but more importantly, what St. Louis has to offer, not just these companies, but for so many across the country, we need to leverage that asset.
Well, what St. Louis has done successfully is not just say, hey, if you're a tech company, whatever you do, come here, but identified we're a hub for fintech, for ag tech. And I guess would this be classified as energy tech or N tech, if you want to abbreviate it?
Yeah, well, maybe we should market that, right? I'll get some IPA on that. So at the end of the day, yes, it is energy tech. And you know, St. Louis has an open mind. The most important thing that we do is when we have this innovation ecosystem, you know, what we not only do is have the innovative technologies here, but, you know, we attract so much talent that we want to keep here. And then for those that are in the universities, these young men and women, you know, we want them to stay here, whether they're in the financial services world, whether in the biosciences or the energy, we want them here. This is how our city, our region is going to grow. And we're proud to be part of that ecosystem.
When it comes to workforce, I think in the wake of a large company which was embarking on an HQ2, choosing some other places, workforce has been a big discussion. Do we have the workforce? Are we preparing for the future? STEM programs in elementary school even now. As a company that is here, have you had any issue recruiting talent, especially the specialized technical talent that you need? Or even when it comes to your business, I imagine if you're somebody in legal at Ameren, you've got to have some specialized knowledge about the industry. Do you have any trouble when you try to attract somebody who's in Seattle or Boston to get them to come to work for you here?
You know, Michael, there's no doubt it's competitive out there. But I'll tell you, you know, we've attracted people from as far as California, from Texas, and other parts of the country because, number one, they're excited about the energy space. They're excited about what we're doing as a company. But you know what? When they come to St. Louis, they love it. And so we have a great story to tell, not just as a company, but as a city. And it's our job to make sure that we have that right narrative out there and to explain it to them. But then more importantly, they have an opportunity to grow. and to bring their families. And so absolutely, you know, we have had the ability to do it. Is it competitive? You bet. So we can't be not focused on this as a city, as a region. It's the right thing to do. Workforce is really important. So we haven't cracked it all, the code entirely. But at the same time, you know, we're not in the mud. We are moving out, and we're trying to do some things that are really special.
So is it maybe changing the perception of folks? Like I mentioned, a lot of these who come to St. Louis for this program and others say, I didn't know much about it before I came. What do you think St. Louis could do civically to spread that message and get more people from coast to coast aware of what's going on here?
Well, you know, I think, number one, you know, we just have to continue to work on a narrative, a positive narrative. And it's not one that's not based on facts. We have plenty of great facts here. And, you know, frankly, we as the business community, you know, we have a responsibility to be an ambassador. And those in the region, you know, we have an opportunity and a responsibility to be an ambassador to tell those great stories about St. Louis. It isn't just about the innovation ecosystem, which is great, but you know, we have incredible, you know, medical institutions here, incredible educational institutions, and you know, we have incredible culinary institutions. But what we have the people. We have, you know, being a St. Louisan, been here my entire life. You know what? What we have here is a culture which, you know, I'll put up against any in the country. Period.
Was standing back here for your opening address, and innovation is not an accident. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, innovation doesn't simply happen by gravity, and it doesn't happen because you put it on a poster, and it certainly doesn't happen because I say it shall be. It's how the actions that you take. It's the investments that you make. It's how you empower your people, how you have to say it's safe to innovate, because innovation has some element of failure. But more importantly, is that element of what the real why behind innovation, and our why behind innovation is consistent with our mission, the power of the quality of life for our customers and the communities, literally the millions that we serve. When you have the why, innovation falls right behind it.
So what's next for Ameren Accelerator and for your partners who are in on this too, Capital Innovators, UMSL Accelerate, the University of Missouri System? What is next for this program?
Well, you know, we're first and foremost focused on making sure that this cohort of six companies, you know, gets off. This is really, in many respects, day one for them, right? You know, they're doing their demonstration day, and they're trying to get more investors. So we want to make sure we do everything we can to make sure that they're launched successfully. They have a major investor with us, but now they need to get more. Certainly, secondly, what we're going to do, like we always do, is we'll step back from this program and say, you know, what can we do better the next time around, just like we did last time? And it's continuous improvement, relentless improvement. And so then as we look forward to our third program next year, you know, what we're going to be focused on is not just, you know, having a better program, but we're going to raise the standards so we can deliver the bright energy future that our customers and our communities expect.
Warner Baxter, Ameren Corporation, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
Now, back to Nothing Impossible on Gangnam OX.
Michael and Travis with you, talking about local innovation and getting ideas off the ground.
Ideas need cash.
Yeah.
They need cash. They need a lot of cash. Sometimes they need a lot of cash. Sometimes they need a little cash. But did you know the amount of cash or the ease to get cash could be dependent on the color of your skin or your gender?
Oh, man.
Oh, man. It's a real thing, right? It's a real thing that, you know, investors tend to invest in companies where the founders look like the investors. It's a nasty cycle. Arlen Hamilton, who is become blowing up around the world, she is a woman out of California, raised like $100 million venture fund called Backdoor Ventures, which is funding specifically minority-owned businesses. And we brought Christian Johnson in, local entrepreneur, behind one of the co-founders of MultiPass, which we'll have him talk about. But they've also created MultiPass Ventures, which is going to be a venture fund to also support early stage minority and underrepresented groups.
That's fantastic, because we hear all about, for instance, on the show, we had the Ameren Accelerator on.
Yep.
There are more and more options for St. Louisans to be able to go and get funding for their businesses.
Right. And I think, you know, more is always better, right? More is better. We've had the folks from Brazen on a number of times, formerly Prosper, and the work they do specifically investing in women-owned businesses. But Christian, tell us a little bit about your journey here and what is MultiPass Ventures? And wait, we all say, This is not a solicitation for funds. So just tell us about the fund itself, though.
Yes. So just a backstory on me. I'm actually a former St. Louis City police officer and then started a nonprofit helping policing communities, built relationships, and then got into the startup space. So was actually in a local St. Louis incubator called T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And they have over 200 startups in that space. And it's just a great space for collaboration. And so while I was there, just really had this idea along with my partner Sarah Schlafly to create a network of spaces where you're not just building a community within one space, but also throughout different spaces.
And that was the multi-pass, right? Like pass gets you into multiple locations?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So actually, so it started off just like that, where they just book into different spaces, but then it formed where actually now the spaces of themselves, they join our network, they pay a fee to mm-hmm. just be a part, while also raising this level the caliber of spaces. So we call all our spaces all innovative spaces. Mm-hmm. And so we are very value-based. So we really care about diversity within our spaces and building collaboration and community, and then also wellness and sustainability. So we make sure all the spaces that join our network, they not only have a certain level of that, but also are raising that bar. And so just recently, last 2 months, we started this fund to be able to not only meet a need when it comes to the inequity and startup funding, but also really add value to the spaces within our entire ecosystem. So it has been quite an interesting journey because mm-hmm. I've never done anything like this.
Wow.
So why now? Tell us about the national landscape mm-hmm. that you see and what it even means to St. Louis, especially as a former St. Louis cop.
Yeah. So I think even right now, this is a time that's not only happening in St. Louis, but also on a national scale where people have been having the conversation about inequity just overall, whether it's from police departments to the workforce, to the pay gaps. And now there's a saturation point where people are starting to understand we need to act on something, right? And so when it comes to venture capitalists, it's really only really had that name since like 2012, so it's very, very young. And so when it comes to startup funding, in order for startups to grow, they need this money. This is a funding option. And so right now, it's really it's a lot of white males, right, that are the venture capitalists, not even very many women. And so when it comes to startup funding, only 3% of women are actually getting funded, right, that actually achieve that funding. It's only 3%. And then people of color, it's 1%. And even less than that when it comes to person of color, woman, right? So it's,
right, it's like the pie gets smaller.
Exactly. It's like crazy.
And so I think we've seen with some of the workplaces, there's a variety of different, whether you're looking for RISE collaborative workspace mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or whether you're looking for a specific location mm-hmm. With the multipass. Is it, you know, mm-hmm. Monday I want to work in this mm-hmm. kind of environment, but Tuesday I want to be in a different environment or around mm-hmm. different people, or I've got a different problem I'm trying to solve, and so I want some different advice from different folks? Or what's the benefit of the multipass?
So the benefit is it's actually that since the space, they join our network, the members of that space, they're working at their space every day, nothing really different, but as a benefit of being the space in our ecosystem, they can go like for a day or two to that other space. So let's say like you have a meeting out in St. Charles and mm-hmm. you're able to then go out to OPO's startups. But also if you're meeting with somebody, also may run into other people that you then also build relationships with. So we really care about innovation, and we believe that innovation should never ever be isolated, right? So it's great that one space has a large community and thriving, but if they're never connected to other spaces, then that's really, you know, that's siloed, and innovation should never be siloed.
So how many nodes are there in this network that you've been building up now?
So now we've got over 50 spaces all around the world. The most saturated city that we have is St. Louis, of course. Mm-hmm. We have about 5 spaces in St. Louis, but we have one in Australia, one in Dubai, one in South Africa. So we've kind of like spread them all over. So that also helps a great, interesting way for different spaces in different countries to learn from each other and learn best practices.
That's cool. In terms of the ventures part of it, what are the companies, the types of firms that you're seeing, especially in St. Louis, who are having trouble finding funding, or who are having trouble just getting into the community? And what kind of businesses, what kind of, I guess, industries are they in the St. Louis area?
So definitely anything scalable, technology products or scalable consumer good products. That is the normal type of companies that get venture funding. So basically, it's an injection of funds where it can give them high growth, and the goal of it for them is to exit, whether it be merger, acquisition, or basically just, you know, ending the company. So that's kind of the type of companies.
And as you've been growing this, you said you didn't have a background in it. What are some of the things that you've been learning throughout this entire process?
Both on the
building an innovation community with the physical spaces, linking them together, but also on the venture sides. Like, what are some of the lessons you've learned?
Definitely how people collaborate in a space. So I've got to like meet with all the different space owners, but also the people that design the spaces, the people that build the furniture, and really getting to learn like how a desk is already thought about, like who's going to sit there, how long they're going to sit there, where is it at in the actual space of itself? Is it in the corner? How many chairs are around that space? Is a huddle space? What's the mentality of the people within that space? And so just learn, like me and my partner, just learning super fast, failing fast, right? So as a startup, you have to do that. We just recently came back from our world tour. So my partner Sarah, she went to 6 different countries in Asia over 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
To visit all these different spaces and get to learn from them. So really learning from not only the spaces, but also the startups within the spaces and learning their needs. So, there's a startup out of T-Rex. They used to be out of T-Rex, and they were seeking funding. It was two black female and black male, and they were seeking funding, and they end up having to relocate to Chicago because they're blatantly told, like, hey, you shouldn't have a black male CEO. You know,
wow,
that was very
St. Louis.
Wow. Uh-huh. They're going around looking for funding in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And that's what they're told.
What was the name of the company? You don't want to say.
Yeah, probably shouldn't say it. Okay. But
or maybe the name of the VC firm. We're in
definitely
that case.
Wow. That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, pivoting from that, talk about Multipass Ventures, and I'm looking at the commitment to diversity pledge that you make all of those who participate sign.
Yes. We formed that as a way to not only get participation from our different strategic partners. So we actually just partnered up with Techstars, which is there on a national scale, but also every company that we want to invest in, our goal is to have them sign this diversity pledge and say, hey, we're committed to diversity. We're committed to building diverse teams. And it's interesting. I have to say that when it comes to diversity, people think that a lot of people have this idea of like charity, or that it's only about, you know, black people getting funding, but it's not, right? It's really about truly building a diverse team. Like, you know, and that's something that we truly need in our community. And so that's what this diversity pledge is all about, saying, hey, let's roll in all in the same direction. And I believe within 5 years in St. Louis, I think it can look completely different from the funding community.
Well, I know that there's a big event coming up in October. I think it's Vision St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And They're inviting Ms. Hamilton in to be the keynote speaker, so hopefully you'll get a chance to hang out with her while she's here as well.
Yes.
Because it's great to find out what she's doing. I think she said she raised that money in like a very short period of time, raised $100 million.
That's a substantial fund.
That's a big fund.
Yes.
That's a really big fund. And she's deploying it through some accelerators. She created an accelerator, I think, in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, one other U.S. city, I can't remember what, and then one left that she hasn't named yet, that it's going to be People's Choice. And I think that there's a lot of petitioning to try to get that landed here in St.
You know, we show up when there's a vote for best zoo in the country or best ice cream. Yeah. I think that we should win this vote, too.
Exactly, exactly. And so actually, I had a call with them just 2 days ago, and they were told me about exactly what they wanted. And so now I'm actually kind of like spearheading like that movement to get people to publicly vote. Today, I just had a call with Techstars where they actually want to partner up with us to create a diversity accelerator, too. So nationally, like eyes are on St. Louis, and I really think this is a great opportunity to change the landscape of startup ecosystem.
So before we go, I just want to touch on your career as a St. Louis police officer and this transition you've made into the startup space and addressing equity from another perspective, right? You were addressing, you know, you were protecting and serving a lot early on. What was that shift like, and what was it like to leave your brothers in blue?
The shift was definitely very, very hard. While I was on the police department, started a nonprofit called Serving with the Badge. And so I wanted to really, I went on this long, long trek journey, basically where I wanted to figure out a way, how can police and communities build relationships? And so now this has transitioned from not only police, but just people in general. How can our communities, how can our neighborhoods come together? I get to actually work with a lot of neighborhood leaders. And my goal, even in St. Louis, is to create very many neighborhood-based places, because I believe that is how we... that is how we develop our city. And so what's great about the development of neighborhoods is the businesses, right? And I really believe that the startups that we need to help get funding are what helps our communities thrive. And so it's really just like this...
it's kind of like a full circle.
Exactly.
Like,
you know, it's full circle for me.
It hasn't really changed. It's just different, right?
Exactly.
Well, Christian Johnson, thanks so much for joining us. If people want to learn more about it, it's multipass.com.
Right? Multipassapp.com.
Multipassapp.com. Yep. All right, great.
And what are the dates for that event again?
Oh, the dates are October 19th,
October.
I think.
All right.
And then also we are having a conference called Innovative Spaces Week, where we're celebrating all the spaces in our ecosystem here in St. Louis. So that is October 9th. Through the 12th, and it's free event. So
cool.
So feel free to check that out. Also at our website.
Fantastic. Christian Johnson, managing partner at MultiPass Ventures and co-founder at MultiPass. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for everything you do for St. Louis.
And we'll be back right after this.
Now back to Nothing Impossible on Kangam OX.
Michael and Travis with you, and it was just about a year ago that we talked with Jonathan Cutoff of the startup Mego IQ. He and the others in that company have St. Louis connections. They're from St. Louis, Travis, but you remember they're a Puerto Rico company now, and when we talked with them, they were trying to figure out how do we keep going in the wake of this disaster that's unfolding on our island.
Yeah, in the wake of the hurricane that hit.
Yeah, and so... some of them came to St. Louis. Some of them went to cities in Florida. But almost a year later, we wanted to check back in with Jonathan via Skype from San Juan to find out what is the situation there now.
Puerto Rico still needs help. And it's caught in this world where what you hear in the national news either focuses on corruption. And there is corruption like there is anywhere, but in reality, it's mostly good people that are just fighting to survive. And then you hear the other side of things and what a great job was done down here. And yet, power outages are a constant thing. I can tell you municipalities throughout the island that still do not have power or water until a few months ago. We were still just getting some municipalities back on the grid for the first time.
You know, how can you let an entire country go without power that long. I mean, that's, I know there's a lot of inhumane things, but after a natural disaster, I have seen our country rally faster to make sure that things are turned back on. And this is a situation where an entire country was just ignored.
Well, just wait until you hear what happened with his company and their, what they did to try to get the island back online and how that turned out for them. So what about Migo IQ? How are they doing?
We went through something fascinating in that our shareholders tried to force us to leave the island and abandon our staff. And myself and a couple of our co-founders controlled just enough shares that we voted no. And as a result, two of our investors said, oh, if you're not leaving the island, we don't agree with you, but since we can't force you, we own massive trucking companies that are doing debris removal in Florida and Texas. From Irma. That equipment is all yours. If you can get it to the island and get contracts, go and make money cleaning up the island since you insist on staying there anyway.
And so Migo IQ, it's this artificial intelligence machine learning company, predicts retail, and all of a sudden they get into this debris removal business.
Yeah, they're in the business of trying to figure out how to get heavy equipment onto an island.
But hold on, if they're doing debris removal, shouldn't the city of St. Louis contract with them since they're having like struggles getting their trash picked up?
Trash pickup, vacant buildings.
Yeah,
certainly
going on. But yeah, it's
some problems on Puerto Rico too.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how they've pivoted. This is like an interesting pivot.
Yeah.
So Migo IQ. We didn't lose a single one of our retail clients in our business, but we actually started up a second company, and we've tripled in size, helping clean up our island.
So their retail, their technology business, still going full steam, even though they have power issues and Wi-Fi issues on the island. They're still charging ahead, and now all of a sudden the company is also in the business of using heavy equipment to move 7-foot-tall piles of debris around on the island of Puerto Rico.
And let us not forget that about 30 seconds ago, he was telling us that his board wanted him to leave the island.
Get out of there. Yeah. And he says this, he learned a lot about disaster relief. He called it a crazy business full of carpetbaggers and bullies.
Wow.
And all they were trying to do was just bring in this equipment to clear away debris.
If you are a survivor, you're not only trying to fight to be heard politically and through FEMA and through all these things, but you're also fighting with people that show up, and many of them have good intentions, but there is a large group of people that show up at these disasters that just see it as an opportunity to profit at the expense of people who are struggling for their lives. So we, ironically, when all of the barges that were bringing equipment into Puerto Rico in December, January, February, this went on for months, to begin debris removal, which is the core first thing that has to be done. It didn't really get started here until 4, 5, 6 months in many places, because all the barges were locked up by FEMA and by AT&T and by a military mobilization. And so we were in this weird situation because of our interview that we did with KMOX. We got hooked up with Pipeline, and they were providing us free space in Florida for the couple people that we got out that needed to get over PTSD from all this. And they connected us with a group called Coalition of Hope, which was doing nonprofit work and was connected to Major League Baseball. And amazingly, Pudge Rodriguez and Major League Baseball had raised all this money and bought all these supplies, but they couldn't get their supplies in. They didn't have connections to bring it in. So Migo had all these trucks. We got contracts to pick up debris. And if you don't know anything about disaster relief, the World Trade Organization, the UN, and FEMA have done studies that if you don't pick up debris, that it has economic and health effects for 5-8 years on. So 5 years after Haiti, there was a 50% depression in their economy purely because there was still debris on the ground. And we're still facing that here.
So, okay, hold on, though. What I don't get is ports are blocked. Everything's high threat. Barges can't get in. Like, how are they still moving this? How are they still making this happen?
We ended up through a pure miracle because of the connection, the interview we did with CBS and getting connected with Coalition of Hope. Through that, were able to access barges from ExxonMobil, which got paid at for by my investors bringing their equipment in so we could do debris removal. And we were able to load Major League Baseball supplies in the back of our trucks and deliver it for free. So we brought water and all those other things. Now, the things I've learned since then, I've talked about guns, et cetera. There's tons of things that we did. We had to actually take our software for tracking consumers in retail stores. We tracked down to a square centimeter. And we ended up adding code to that and using it to track drivers and assets on the island for debris removal, because all of the fraud and different behaviors that occur during disaster relief, because the money is so big, we discovered that people were playing games. And so we applied our software to that. And now FEMA is using us in all their simulations. In fact, we're getting ready for the storm about to hit North Carolina using our software as we speak. But ironically, and after moving $11 million worth of debris, and this is by survivors, people like me who lost our homes in my staff, we've yet to see a single dollar from FEMA.
So this was a contract you had and you fulfilled your end of it, but they have not. And that must have taken a lot to lease the equipment, to get access to the barges, to the gasoline for all of this. It must have been a big capital outlay on your part in the beginning.
Yep. So in total, we're talking about $8.5 million plus another, $8.5 million. For 11 million that we're owed, we're just looking to get our capital back, right? The crazy thing is we've expanded on the retail side. We have a way to bring 20,000 jobs to Puerto Rico, paying full time $55,000 per year, and all we need is to get repaid by FEMA. I have that under contract. I can prove it right now. We've expanded into more retailers, and we have a way to do economic development here. And the irony is FEMA has invited me, and we love FEMA. There's many good people there, but the complexities of disaster relief and the economics of it make it very difficult. And a surviving company here who did an outlay of its own cash, its own investors' cash, is still waiting to get repaid. And it's going on, we're going on 6 months since the last invoice for that.
So this is, again, we're talking via Skype with St. Louis native Jonathan Cutoff, a conversation about his company, Mego IQ. It's a tech company. They're in Puerto Rico. The hurricane hits, the power goes out, no Wi-Fi, homes are destroyed. They continue to maintain their tech company and the customers, artificial intelligence, while at the same time adding a new component to bring in heavy equipment to clean up the island. They add code to their tech software to make it so that FEMA doesn't lose a million water bottles again, and they can get stuff to where it needs to go in a hurricane using this tech. They also get the contract to help clean up the island. FEMA has not paid them for that. Their tech business is growing so much that they could hire all these employees.
How many did you say? 20,000 at 55 grand
if they just had their FEMA reimbursement.
Now, something about the government, people are always talking about job creation, aren't they? That they are, each candidate's talking about how good they are at creating jobs. Well, maybe if they pay their bills, then the companies that are growing can actually create those jobs.
And you know, something that's really gone viral, Puerto Rico back in the news for a few reasons, but one of them, those I think more than $1 million or million bottles of water that were found on that runway. Mm-hmm. Cutoff says shipping containers like that got lost because there was no tracking like his company is now doing.
It will sit there and eventually it just rots in the sun. And then what will happen is you will have businesses as they come back online, which is what happened here, very powerful businesses that may or may not have also donated massive amounts of money. But when water bottles were being delivered normally through the normal system, businesses here lobbied the government to say, we're no longer going to donate water bottles because we can sell them. And that's a huge business for us. And so bottles got put into landfill that were donated for free, that weren't able to be moved at the right time because people didn't know where it was or because other supplies got shipped that shouldn't have, that weren't needed at the time, ended up spoiling. And then by the time that the realization was that they were needed, there were businesses that were at risk that needed to profit off of them. So those water bottles instead got dumped into a landfill.
So what's life like now? I mean, what are they doing at this point?
Basically, what we did is we took our AI technology allows us to predict what a consumer needs in a retail store by tracking their position relative to product down to a square centimeter. we pivoted that and applied it to disaster relief. So we are able to, instead of it being a human being, based upon previous storm data that we pulled, say water bottles are needed here, medicine's needed here, we should pick up this debris on these streets first because it's lower income, it's more likely to flood based upon the topography. Based upon imagery, we're able to predict how much debris is actually there. And basically, it's a system that then says, here's the recommendations of what should be done. It gives the power back to the municipality, to the city, to the government, to the governor, to say, we're in command, we're accepting these things, and giving the power back to the people rather than what we've observed, which is a lot of times the vendors end up having a lot of power in this disaster relief. Somebody you're hiring with little time to choose as a government to come and help you has more control over what is getting done, and they'd make decisions based upon economics, not by the need of the community. Our app puts that power into the hands of not only we have mobile app and backends, and we track every piece of equipment, every asset that's involved, so that there's less risk of fraud. And so we, instead of just being about fraud detection, also allows it to be controlled by the people that need to have the power, the members of the community, the mayors, the governors, et cetera, and who they entitle, who know their community best. Then we also have an app that's actually made available, and it works with no cell signal. Every time there's a signal, it uses peer-to-peer. We filed for some provisional patents on this. Allows the community to identify their needs and say, I need X via a mobile app. And you can actually find that app on both Google Play and Apple App Store, Beacons of Hope. And they're able to take pictures of debris or say there's an emergency or I need a supply. And all that gets fed in and processed and basically triaged by an automatic algorithm so that the community can see the result. And you get a notification, hey, if you said, I've got this debris and it's causing flooding, if a truck gets assigned to come pick it up, you're actually able to get that notification and watch the truck come to you down to square centimeters. So instead of being a community, and as someone who was here after the storm and my family went through this, the funny thing is you are in a bubble and you are desperate for information. And then the absence of information, because people are so stressed, that any information spreads like wildfire.
Just a year ago, they were in the business of helping retailers sell more stuff. How things can change in the course of a year.
Well, and they say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and there was a huge need, and Migo IQ's technology worked in a new way.
MIGOIQ, and the founder's name is Jonathan Kotoff. We'll definitely hear from him again.
I think so. Again, he mentioned that there's another storm brewing right now and hitting the Carolinas. It's been a great show. It's been fun, you know, talking a little bit about the opportunities in the venture world, looking at what's happening in the energy space with Ameren, and then something heavy like this, but has a good story at the end.
Helping us understand what we've heard so much about, taking us on the ground. Well, thank you for joining us for this edition of Nothing Impossible, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.